Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Greetings to you people of Portland from high above the milkpacking district here in the studios of the Emerson News Network. This is Legion of News. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor as we prepare to bring you a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge everywhere. The aforementioned Don Taylor is, as I speak these words to you now, working on a vast swath of information and happenings, including but not limited to the following stories.
A missing California girl is found after 7 years. Argentina legalizes gay marriage. And Al Gore's accuser failed her lie detector test.
Oh! All right. As always, my friends, have no doubt that the following combination of intellectual discourse and ideological screed will leave you enlightened, shocked, enraptured, and amazed, and demonstrably more intelligent than when this hour began. Without further ado, I bring you...
Does that make sense?
I bring you the opening of the show, which Don says is transmitting in only one channel. All right, yeah. That's awesome.
Which I was showing you a note to try and keep it seamless and professional with no one knowing that we were having an issue.
How'd that work out for you there?
That worked great.
The seamlessness.
I don't think anyone's noticed that happened.
All right. Well, in any event, I'll look into it.
Okay, thank you.
I'll take it under advisement, Mr. Cowboy. This... is Legion of News.
A California girl who'd been missing for almost 7 years was found Wednesday by police in Phoenix, Arizona. Amber Rose Nicholas had just turned a year old when she was abducted in September of 2003. She had been in the care of foster parents in Norwalk, California, when she was snatched by three of her aunts. Two of the aunts were caught at the time. The third got away with the child. The girl somehow ended up with a family in Phoenix that had no relation to her biological family, according to authorities. Authorities were tipped off that Amber could be at the home in Phoenix, went there with a court order Wednesday afternoon. When investigators tried to serve the court order, they found that a woman in the home had hidden the child in a shower under a pile of clothes and towels. Amber's identity has been changed, including her name and date of birth, but her real identity was confirmed through footprints, photographs, and DNA swabs.
I'm sorry, I had the mic off there for a second. She was stashing the kid. This is her grand scheme, was to hide the kid underneath a pile of clothing in the bathroom?
Yeah, in the shower.
That didn't really seem like a well thought. Look, not like I'm trying to encourage you to kidnap children and then more effectively keep them hidden, but that doesn't really seem like a page out of the Master Criminal Handbook or anything.
Unless you have one of those really... creepy, crazy hoarder houses where there's just piles of stuff everywhere, so a pile of clothes looks normal in your shower.
It all seems very bizarre. By the way, so we're big fans of sharing all of the happenings on this program with everybody. So you were noting that thing to me about the one channel broadcast of the show,
right?
So I think we got your two options here. We got your option number one, and I can see to what he is referring right now. Where we can continue to broadcast as we are in full glorious one channel sound, or I can endeavor to change that, but I think it would actually require turning off the server and then turning it back on again.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
We're in an era of glorious possibilities where the solution to everything is still to unplug it and then to plug it back in again. And I don't really know that's advisable.
I would ask you how this occurred in the first place, but either I would not understand the answer or it would take so long to explain it to me that people would just tune out and not listen to us anymore.
Or you would ask me and then I would really just be fabricating the answer. I would just tell you something like it was the bifurcated invertebrator.
Or just do what I do and just always say gremlins.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. There you go. So let's make a pact from now on for the duration of today's installment of Legion of News. we're just going to pretend that isn't the case. And okay. and as much as I say this is a gag sometimes, especially during the Emerson show, you'll hear me make this observation quite a lot. We're going to fix this in post. And here's the thing. Everybody listening right now, just like a childhood molestation episode, it's going to be our little secret. And I have a puppy at home I'll kill if you tell anyone. Okay. Continuing forward at the Legion of News news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Argentina legalized same-sex marriage Thursday, which would be today, becoming the first country in Latin America to declare that gays and lesbians have all the legal rights, responsibilities, and protections that marriage brings to heterosexual couples. The approval came despite a concerted campaign by the Roman Catholic Church and evangelical groups, which drew 60,000 people to march on Congress and urged parents in churches and schools to work against passage. Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio led the campaign, saying, quote, "Children need to have the right to be raised and educated by a father and a mother." Nine gay couples had already married in Argentina after persuading judges that the constitutional mandate of equality supports their marriage rights, although their validity was later challenged by other judges. Congressional passage now removes that doubt.
And where this is where? In Argentina?
Argentina.
All right. And Argentina doesn't seem, well, I was going to say it doesn't seem like a forward-thinking place in some ways, but I guess that's not really true. I know that there's a, isn't that where all the, I guess I'm just basing that solely on the fact that Nazi war criminals seem to hang out there, or did at one time. So it wouldn't really seem like it was one of your more progressive countries, but then again, what do I know? I'm just an ugly pig American.
Yeah, I just think of Argentina as a place with retired Nazis and lots of fancy dancing.
You know, I know somebody, well, it was Clyde who'd been there on his, he went there on his mission for the church. You know, not a secret, he went there to Buenos Aires for the Mormon church when he was, I don't know, 1920, whatever. And he did talk about being, you know, he'd go to a bar somewhere, you know, or whatever. You know, he'd go out to a night spot or, you know, just a dinner or something. And he would just see these guys who were like blonde and blue-eyed and who called themselves, you know, like Jorge or Julio. You know, but they spoke with a really thick accent, and they seemed to have a lot of strange tattoos and scars, as though some of the tattoos were in the process of being removed. Anyway, and then they were just inexplicably angry and paranoid all the time. There was really no explanation ever given for that.
Well, there was a marathon debate in Argentina's Senate, and 33 lawmakers voted in favor, 27 against, and 3 abstained. Evan Wolfson, who runs the U.S. Freedom to Marry lobby, now urges U.S. lawmakers to do the same. And stand up, quote, "For the Constitution and all families here in the United States, America should lead, not lag, when it comes to treating everyone equally under the law."
Now, not that I'm not in favor of that, because I am. As I think somebody once said, gay couples have the right to, you know, lose half their stuff in a bitter, ugly divorce, just like everyone else. Why should that right be restricted to straight folks? But at the same time, it's almost like... I don't want to diminish the amount of, or minimize the amount of discrimination that still happens in our fair republic. But it doesn't really seem like we have to do much at this point, because it seems to be sort of a bit of creeping legalization that is happening as it's ending. Because like 10 years ago, there was nobody was allowed to get married. You know, there were no gay couples getting married. And now there's, what, 5 or 6 states or something?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it'd be nice if it happened overnight. But it does seem, look, as long as my in-laws, are eventually thwarted in some way, I mean, I'll take a slower timeline for that if it's guaranteed to happen. So.
Here's the thing that I don't understand, and maybe you could explain this to me.
I can't even get this thing to broadcast in stereo over here. So, really, in terms of explaining the law, you may be up in the night there.
Well, it's more of an ethical thing, or a not even an ethical thing, a philosophical question. I don't understand why we still actually have the religious marriage tied to the legalities in this country, considering how much debate we've had about it. And there was so much uproar when the idea of civil unions for gay couples was floated. But it seems to me that doesn't it make sense that the actual best model would be to do what they do in, say, like most European countries, where your civil marriage takes care of all of the legalities? You go to City Hall or wherever, you get married, and then you get married in the church. If you want a church wedding, if you believe God must sanctify your marriage, then you are free to do that. But it's separate from the legal thing.
This is one of those things where you're asking me, but you're not really asking me. This is just a rhetorical question so that you can monologue about it. Because you know that I...
Well, I want to know what you actually think.
Well, I'm not... I can't speak on behalf of the church, as you know, or any church ever.
But you can opine as Rick Emerson.
Well, are you asking me why we cling to vestiges of an outdated, superstitious existence?
Yeah, I am.
Well, because most people are dumb. Really? I mean, if that's it, I mean, if you're asking me why... Well, and also when you... I think the answer to your question is contained in the query itself when you say, well, why don't we model ourselves on the structure that they use in European countries? And it's because that's socialism, Don. That's why. I don't know. I don't know the answer. It's because we live in a country that still believes in goblins, basically. I mean, that's what it is. Except it happens to be a somewhat or occasionally benevolent goblin who lives on a cloud. And, you know, you don't want to incur the wrath of the goblin because then he'll kill the firstborn child, in every household or whatever. So.
Well, thank you. I just.
Well, look, I mean, and as much as religion is just effed, and as I think Christopher Hitchens said, as much as it ruins everything, you know, you're talking to a guy right now where I compulsively count the steps between cracks in a sidewalk. So who am I to point fingers sometimes? I mean, you know, I got to touch a light switch an odd number of times whenever I enter or leave a room. So, you know, really, if you got that or you got a guy who feels like he has to get on his knees and pray for 30 seconds every morning or something, really, it's all one and the same. The only difference is I know that I'm crazy. So that's the only distinction there. But, you know, that's what, strangely enough, that's actually what they do in Utah with the Latter-day Saints do, speaking of the Mormon Church a minute ago. They do two different ceremonies. They do one that is effectively a civil service, and they do one that is a religious service. Now, that's sort of inadvertent. That's not because they wish to have a separation of church and state. Believe you me when I say that they do not, and in fact that they don't have that. They do that because you, as a what they would call a Gentile, are not allowed to enter the temple to see the actual consecration ceremony taking place. So they are kind of obliged, because everybody who gets married, you know, like half their family, you know, they've left the church, or they're not allowed inside the temple, or they're not Mormon to begin with. So they are obliged to have a ceremony that is effectively just civil, so everybody can attend. And it does work out really well. It seems like that ought to be the model, for everybody. So, no, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. The masseuse who accused former Vice President Al Gore of groping and kissing her at a downtown hotel in 2006 failed a lie detector test and had a history of falsely accusing people of mistreating her.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
According to a report in this week's Portland Tribune. Tribune editor Mark Garber said Molly Haggerty's lawyer had asked her to take a lie detector test, and she failed it. But that isn't the reason why they didn't originally print the story when they were investigating it 3.5 years ago. He said the newspaper reporter's personal interaction with Haggerty raised red flags. We became concerned throughout dozens and dozens of conversations that she had with another editor and the reporter, he said. They both became concerned about credibility issues as it relates to her story. Haggerty told the National Enquirer recently that she had Gore's DNA saved on a pair of slacks, but this week's Tribune report said DNA tests showed there was no semen on the pants.
Well, but for the love of Christ, didn't we say this like 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
Jesus, God Almighty. This is one of those things. This is not like the religious ceremony civil union thing. This is where I absolutely know the answer. We said 2 weeks ago that DNA is not the same thing. You think people would have at least watched an episode of CSI at some point in their life. DNA and semen are not the same thing.
Well, and it's also, it has been used interchangeably in the story, I think, to mean kind of the same thing. But Garber says about their investigations and such that when they had interviewed her previously, she had said that the pants, she'd had them tested, and the test showed that it did not have Al Gore's semen on them.
Right.
Well, then she turns around and tells the National Enquirer that they do.
But she didn't say that. She didn't say that it had semen. She said it was DNA.
Well, we don't know. We don't know exactly what she said because the story in the National Enquirer just said DNA.
No one anywhere ever said that there were...
The Enquirer just didn't want to use the word semen. You don't know what she actually...
And frankly, I don't want to be using the word semen, but I mean, here I am. So, but there's no one anywhere ever that said... In any story that I ever read, and the pants have semen on them, right? I mean, nobody ever said
that. They kept saying DNA. And I honestly think that we had talked about the fact that it could be,
could be a fingernail
to make you think that it's semen.
That was exactly.
Or it could have also just been their decision not to want to use the word semen.
I think that, the Enquirer?
Yeah.
Yes, because they're a tactful, friendly, family-friendly newspaper. I sort of figured that that when they kept saying DNA, not semen, that
there's There's going to be some kind of a mashup of this on YouTube anytime now.
Hello, it's
going to be like that oscillating fan thing. It's just going to be you saying DNA and semen over and over again to a backbeat.
Welcome to the Legion of News drinking game. I just figured that was what Wikipedia would call a weasel word. In other words, they were using that because it was technically true, but it also had the added advantage of carrying a substantial implication to everyone. And everybody would infer from that it was, you know, his male essence had somehow been distilled and captured on a pair of pants, which I guess was not the case. And it's interesting, this is just my opinion, this is my assessment as protected by the Constitution of the United States of America and the First Amendment thereto. It would be my read on this, mine alone, that the newspaper guys interviewed her, and she just came off as a crazy stalker drama queen nutcase who makes things up. Because that's what she seems like to me, in my opinion. That's just my personal view on this. She seems a lot like that... who was that skank that made up the Duke Lacrosse thing? Crystal Magnum?
Yes.
Which sounds like a reputable name. That's a witness that I'd believe.
That is one of the worst stripper names, like, ever.
Oh, you know, she has a book out that I'm so tempted to buy. It's like $1.98 on Amazon. Anyway, when I first heard the massage thing, I mean, she sounded exactly like that. So, all right. Well, in your face, crazy lady. All right, here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A Louisiana woman died Sunday after falling 30 feet from a roller coaster at a Baton Rouge theme park. Lindsay Zeno, 21, was killed while riding the Extreme Coaster at the Dixie Landon Park.
It did operate as advertised.
And died after being rushed to the hospital. According to the park's website, the ride is one of its newest additions that spins as it twists and turns along a steel track. An autopsy determined that Zeno died from multi-system trauma. The coroner said that means that any one of several injuries could have killed her in the equivalent of a three-story fall.
Was her body then destroyed at the base of a volcano? Oh, Zeno. Sorry. Okay, sorry.
Manufacturers of the roller coaster will inspect it today. The fire marshal said there were no obvious failures with the ride, and the restraining device on her seat seemed to be in order. The restraint consists of a bar that goes between the rider's legs and is supposed to secure the rider in place.
So I'm thinking of how that... What do you mean it goes between their legs? That doesn't make any sense, though.
Well, have you ever been on one of those... it might be one of the standing roller coasters. Have you ever been on one of the standing ones or the ones where you dangle?
I have not, and here's why. Let me tell you a little story about that, because I am a colossal pussy.
Oh.
But the thing is, that wasn't always the case. When I was a younger man, I was a big fan of roller coasters and things that were terrifying. At some point, though, I passed some line of demarcation in my own existence where just my own life was terrifying enough and filled with enough. Like, I have enough figurative roller coasters in my life that I no longer need a literal roller coaster. And I found this out when my wife and I went back to, we went to California after we'd moved here. We'd been here for a couple years, and I don't know, we went to San Diego or something. But I think we went to, it was like the Magic Mountain or whatever for the day, because, you know, we're both basically just overgrown juveniles. Not that you know anything about that in your relationship. So we decided to go to Magic Mountain, which I remember loving as a child. And we went there, and she's still a fiend for roller coasters. So we went on the first one, and man, it just scared the holy hell out of me, and not in a good way. I was just like, wow, that sucked. And then immediately we were on the next one, which is Colossus, the world's largest wooden roller coaster. So it creaks as you're going around corners.
Oh, I love that roller coaster.
You know, as you're banking, it's going, and you feel like it's going to be coming apart. And after we got off that, I said, F this. I'm not going in any more of these. To hell with this. And so I literally carried her purse from roller coaster to roller coaster as she went on. And I sat down below and said, hey, honey, I'll be down here when you're done. No, that was the last. And I just decided I didn't need that. So I have not gone on any of the modern roller coasters.
The only roller coaster, and it's not even a roller coaster, the only attraction like that I had that reaction to was the one that at Knott's Berry Farm that just drops you. It just takes you straight up in the air, like 20 stories, and then you're strapped into this thing shoulder to shoulder with three other people. Then it gets all the way up to the top, lets you see just how high you are. And I actually, maybe that was Magic Mountain, because you can
see... It's at Magic Mountain. It's called Freefall.
Yeah, yes, it's at Magic Mountain. And you can see all of the mountains and the trees, and it gives you enough time to look down and see that the people are tiny little ants. And then to notice there's a big empty square exactly the size of the thing you're sitting in front of you. and then it pushes you over the empty square. And yeah, it goes thunk, and then it waits for a moment, and then it just pulls the bottom out of it and you fall.
Yeah.
It was horrible. It was just one of the most horrible things I've ever experienced in my life. It was not fun. It was just scary in a bad way.
See, now you're talking about it now and I'm getting these weird flashbacks. I can actually feel my stomach rising. I went out, that ride is called Free Fall.
Yeah.
It's at Magic Mountain.
It's horrible.
Here's how I know about that, because my bastard uncle took me on that when I was a kid. And, of course, as uncles are wont to do about any number of things, he just lied to me about it and told me that it was, in fact, just a sort of, like, observation deck.
Oh, God.
To sort of just let you, you know.
Oh, no.
I was, like, 9. Just to let you look around the park and just, you know, to really appreciate God's majesty and beauty. And so, we're going up there, and it's ratcheting, and it's just taking you straight up. And then, as you just noted, it's like an elevator, except it's an elevator that is exposed to the elements. It's like if you were on an elevator that just wasn't inside a building, it was just on a pole that just dragged you straight up, and there were no walls.
Yeah.
And so, we get to the top, and he says, of course, occasionally the cables snap. And then the thing
That's
just goes...
horrible.
It goes out to the front, and I went, what? Right about the time I said, what? It just goes, and it just drops you. Like 1,000 stories or however high it is. And, it's amazing that I didn't just die of actual fear.
Or then later right that then. Night just stab him to death while he was in his sleep.
I can laugh about it now. Bastard. All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Are we audio ready at this point?
I believe so.
Program?
Are we? Is this sound from today or from...
This is sound from today.
Okay, yeah. I've got all the sound for the day racked up, so...
All right. Members of the Senate Finance Committee are encouraging Americans to work into their retirement years.
Hooray.
As a way to reduce the strain on Social Security and Medicare. Mark Friedman of San Francisco-based Civic Ventures says Americans must work longer.
What is this cut?
New Deal.
All right.
I think we're at a point now where we have to come up with a new deal around longer working lives that's as appealing as the old deal.
I think the old deal where I didn't have to work until I was dead at the age of 80, that's the deal that I'd like, and I think I speak for everybody there.
What's a better deal than that?
What's not to love about it? Jesus.
Social Security Chief Actuary Stephen Goss testified that most Americans who are eligible take early retirement benefits.
We have over half of people who are eligible to start receiving Social Security benefits who are not disabled start taking them at 62. And that's part of the issue that I think we're dealing with here today.
Yeah, these guys all just sound so dry and terribly unlikable. There's, all right.
I've become comfortable with the idea that I'm going to work until I die, though, already, because I, as a freelance writer and various things I've done in my life, working as a chef and stuff, my work record has been spotty over the course of my life, to the point where I get that envelope that tells me how much I have in Social Security, and I just look at it, and it just makes me sad.
You don't even open it.
No, it's like, they might as well just stamp, you'll be
Loser.
Living in a box under a freeway overpass on the front of the envelope.
The idea that that you're going to be working until you're 75 or 80 or 85 or 90 or 1,000 is that's disconcerting enough. But it's also the realization, not even the fear, just the knowledge that it will not be for the same company. It'll be for a series of companies at a series of ever more demeaning, low paying jobs where you wear a paper hat. That's sort of it. Yeah.
There's only so many Walmarts. We can't all be greeters when we're 80.
Oh, man. I have a friend of mine. His dad is a greeter at Walmart. I don't know. Maybe that gives you some sort of fulfillment. Maybe it's a happy way to spend your day. But I just think, you just pray for some sort of an armed robbery that ends in your bloody death. At least you can kind of go out a hero, and then also you don't have to greet at Walmart anymore. I can't even imagine. My grandfather was one of those guys that you hear about from his generation, where he took a job at one factory, and he worked there for like 70 years or however long. I mean, he got right out of high school, right out of the military, I guess. And it was at Freightliner, actually, back when Freightliner still was in Portland and when they still hired people. He worked there forever, and then he retired at like 65 or 70, whatever the retirement age was. Went home, check arrived every 2 weeks from Freightliner, and he just sat on the sofa and chewed tobacco until he died. And, I mean, it was not like a very exciting way to end your life, but, I mean, At least he wasn't there having to, you know, run some divot-making machine, you know, long after all of his senses had left him.
Yeah, both of my mother was a nurse. My father was with the our local fire department. Both of them retired and had great benefits and packages and things. Well, my dad's wasn't great, but he still got Social Security, you know. And it's like, I'm looking at my future and just going, yeah,
no,
that must have been nice.
Yeah,
those days.
No, those days are past. And here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Portland Trailblazers owner Paul Allen said the majority of his wealth will go to philanthropy after his death. The Seattle billionaire said that this has been his plan for years. A spokesman for the Paul G. Allen Family Foundation said the announcement was a response to last month's challenge from Bill Gates and Warren Buffett to other billionaires to pledge at least half their wealth to charity. Allen said he looks forward to continuing his philanthropy. His foundation said it has made more than 3,000 grants over the past 20 years, totaling over $400 million. In addition, Allen has directly given $600 million to nonprofits he's founded, including the Allen Institute for Brain Science and the Experience Music Project.
The Allen Institute for Brain Science?
Yes.
Which sounds simultaneously awesome and terrifying.
You know what that means? That means it's just really a big building full of guys working for him who are planning to freeze his head when
yes.
he dies.
But God bless him. Why not? Didn't he have, he had Hodgkin's or something. Didn't he have some dread disease?
I don't know.
I don't get the deal. There's Hodgkin's, which is, what the hell is Hodgkin's?
Well, it's a lymphoma, so it's a cancer. Of the lymph glands.
Okay, but that's why there's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma there.
Right.
All right, so he had something, but I think he's cured it. If I were that guy, I would absolutely have a whole crack team of people who were just in a lab, just working on cures for every single thing that I thought I might come down with, and then also, yes, to freeze my brain.
The Emerson Center for Brain Science.
We ought to start that right now. It's like Gates does it. Gates helps to helps to fund, and then he also works with this organization called Intellectual Venture Properties or Intellectual Property Venture something. It's just some group of eggheads in Seattle. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, where one of the projects they actually are working on is an automated... I know this sounds crazy, but it's real. It is like a miniaturized version of the Star Wars program they used to have, you know, where it was like lasers in outer space shooting down Rusky missiles. So if Ivan tried to nuke us, we'd be able to, like, you know, to shoot his stuff down. It's a miniaturized version of that, and it's laser beams that shoot mosquitoes out of the air. And not just that, the laser is actually somehow, it is smart enough that it can only target female mosquitoes. And it's because female mosquitoes are the ones that carry malaria.
Well, that's delightful.
I read an article about a guy who actually went to the lab, and he said when you walk in the lab, the first thing you pass is this huge aquarium filled with mosquitoes, and then a laser beam that just spends all day going, just shooting female mosquitoes out of the air. And that was Bill Gates' idea. And he told his friend, this guy Nathan Myhrvold, about it. He's like, hey, you ought to do this thing where you have a laser beam that, you know, shoots mosquitoes out of the air. And they went, that's awesome! And then like a week later it existed. So
being a billionaire must just be awesome.
And I'm not making that up. That is an absolutely true story. It was in the New York Times. And if that's the sort of thing they're willing to discuss publicly, what must they have in their basements that they won't tell people about? You know? If they're willing to admit that they can make that... you got to imagine the things that Bill Gates just has in his attic. It's got to be truly terrifying. By the way, the Rick Emerson radio program is coming up today at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. Today's special guest will be Alex from Vizo. Good friend Alex Ilika from the Vizo company will be here. And I hope he's bringing some of that, the bottle, the passion fruit, whatever, the Vizo that Scott Daly was saying he saw. And we had a bunch of other people saying that they found, basically everywhere I don't shop, they stock that. Because I went to three different stores yesterday, not really just looking for that, but just various things, and I didn't find it anywhere.
Apparently it's only in the fancy rich people stores in like Northwest Portland or something.
Yeah. Of course, it figures. So, but Alex Ilika from Visa will be on the Rick Emerson Show today. We also have a Corpse Watch coming up today, Monkey Watch, a Geek Watch, and we have today's top five, the top five songs from 25 years ago this day. That'll be coming up today. Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Let's do a little science news.
Fantastic. Here's your Science on the March for Thursday, July 15th.
A Utah woman is pregnant with two babies, but they aren't twins. Angie Cromar has a rare condition called uterus didelphus, which means she has a double uterus. And right now there are babies in both of them, each about 20 weeks along. Cromar knew she was born with the condition, but said it was never an issue in her other pregnancies. Pregnancy in both uteruses is rare. The chances are about 1 in 5 million, but it has happened before. Dr. Steve Terry says probably less than 100 worldwide have been reported. Cromar said her husband was excited, but a bit incredulous when she broke the news to him. "He didn't believe me for a little while," she said.
Awkward.
Then reality set in. As a labor and delivery nurse, Cromar said she knew the rarity can bring about complications like preterm labor and low birth weight. The babies are already creating a buzz for the family, which is now buying doubles of everything, and in the medical community. As far as setting up bleachers and selling tickets, we're not anticipating that, though, said Dr. Terry.
Answering a question no one asked.
Right.
Where is this? This is in Utah?
This is in Utah. Murray, Utah.
Oh, Murray, Utah. Yeah, that's a fantastic place. So this is, she has two uteruses.
Right. And she managed to become pregnant in both of them at the same time.
Now, okay.
But they're not, obviously they're not twins because they are not split off of the same egg. They're two separate eggs in two separate uteruses, but both inside of her.
See, this is where my lack of anatomical knowledge in certain ways, like many men, I'm more about the outside workings than the inside workings. my knowledge sort of stops, you know, it's, anyway, so she has two uteri. Does that mean that her whole life she's been producing, which is like she's been double egging it the whole time? You know, like once a month, you know, the whole egg
the
fallopian, and
the
whatever.
The fallopian tubes are separate from the uterus. I would imagine that the fallopian tubes deliver eggs to both uteruses. But so it's just the odds of two eggs being simultaneously, you know, fertilized in two different years.
Does this difficult. Gross you out?
This horrifies me.
This grosses me out, too. I don't know why.
We were talking about this a little bit before the show. Pregnancy things, just the whole process just seems creepy and weird to me, and
just seems
wrong.
Just seems vile. No offense to like everybody.
There are people who've done this and found it miraculous and lovely and delightful.
In the abstract, sort of academically speaking, I can see that it's sort of. You know, in a scientific way, it's sort of amazing, but it's horrifying all the same. I mean, that's like an all caps do not want, like a 70-point type.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to think about that. So it's sort of like if you're the postman and you've got a big fistful of occupant letters to deliver. Mm-hmm. You know, like you got a bunch of pizza coupons and they say, you know, so and so or current resident, and you come by a house and one house has got, you know, one mailbox, the next house has two mailboxes. You figure. Well, two mailboxes, two letters. Okay.
Yeah.
And you just stick one in each, and then there you go.
Something like that, yeah.
All right, okay. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Wheelchair users were given hope of improved mobility today as a New Zealand company unveiled what they call Rex, the robotic exoskeleton. The robotic legs are designed to support and assist people who usually use wheelchairs, enabling them to stand, walk, and navigate steps and slopes. Offering a range of options, its makers say were not currently available anywhere else in the world. Rex Bionics, the company that developed the legs, was founded by New Zealanders Richard Little and Robert Irving, who used their personal experience to help create the wheelchair alternative. Mr. Irving was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis 7 years ago, which was when they started engineering the project. Both of the men's mothers are also in wheelchairs, and they say that made them aware of the obstacles and access issues faced by wheelchair users. The founders stressed the product was not a replacement for the wheelchair, but a practical standing and walking alternative. It's potentially suitable for manual wheelchair users who can self-transfer and operate hand controls.
So I'm unclear about this. It's not a wheelchair, though.
No, it's something. It basically.
It's like a robot jocks suit. No, not even
it's
robot.
It's like robot
jocks.
Pants.
It's. I'm sorry that. All right, robot pants. All right.
As someone points out in the text box, Bill Gates probably has a better super mechanical suit in his basement.
Probably. So it's like I can't really come up with a better term. It's robot pants. It's like a robotic exoskeleton, but only from the waist down.
Right.
And you get on it and
It's like something from Wallace and Gromit.
Yes, or there's that, or it's like a partial power loader from Aliens.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Fantastic, awesome. I totally want one of those.
They're expected to cost $170,000.
Oh well, so I'll take two. There you go.
British scientists believe they have cracked the answer to the age-old question of which came first, the chicken or the egg. Researchers have found that a protein called ovocladin, OC17, is crucial in the formulation of eggshells, and it's produced in the pregnant hen's ovaries. More ovary talk. Therefore, the answer to the conundrum must be that the chicken came first. Researchers still have not managed to answer how the protein-producing chicken existed in the first place. So it seems to me that maybe they haven't really completely
this isn't
answered it,
but, this is a story that didn't really live up to its full potential.
No.
I feel like the headline and the actual content were not the...
Well, using a high-tech computer to look at the molecular structure of a shell, a team of scientists found that OC17 acts as a catalyst, kickstarting the conversion of calcium carbonate in the chicken's body into crystals that make up the hard shell that houses the outside of the egg. So therefore, they believe that it's long been suspected that the egg came first, but we now have scientific proof that shows that, in fact, the chicken came before the egg.
Okay.
There you go.
I was opening my mouth to respond, but this is like that whole thing of Stephen Hawking talking about time travel being possible. This whole thing right now, this discussion about the chicken and the egg and their deduction that, in fact, the chicken came first and then their alleged evidence that it is so, mm-hmm. is either really, really smart or really stupid. And I can't quite tell which. And it's because I'm not bright enough to figure out on which
really
level.
I think it's really smart.
All right.
Because they are scientists.
Of course. Okay. So there you go. So, in fact, the chicken did come first. And that's another edition of Science on the March. Coming up at 1 o'clock, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. Our guest today is Alex Ilika of Viso. We'll also have the top five songs from 25 years ago this day. Geek Watch, Corpse Watch, Monkey Watch, so forth, and on and on till the break of dawn. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A House Judiciary Committee has heard testimony...
A what?
God. I was hoping we could just zip right past that.
All right, you could try that one. Try that once more there.
Okay. You know the Viso that we're drinking, by the way? I have the blood orange lemon one, and it does occasionally make my mouth a tad puckery.
Yeah, it's like enunciation be gone.
A House Judiciary Subcommittee has heard testimony from religious leaders who share Democrats' goal for an immigration bill. Matthew Staver, dean of the law school at the conservative Christian school Liberty University, says he supports a path to citizenship for the nation's illegals.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is a sound from... which cut is this? Shadows. All right. Hold on a second.
We should invite the millions of undocumented and otherwise law-abiding persons living in the midst to come out of the shadows by providing them with an opportunity to gain legal status.
Hold on a second. Before I even get back to the teletype noise, that doesn't
we
make
We should
it...
invite the millions of undocumented and otherwise law-abiding persons living in the midst to come out of the shadows by providing them with an opportunity to gain legal status.
Wait, I think that's a guy who's not quite clear on how the language works.
No, it actually makes sense. Undocumented but otherwise law-abiding citizens. So the only thing that they're doing wrong is not being documented.
He didn't say but, though. He said and.
No,
and doesn't that... No, I think he said... I think he's an and, which I believe then changes...
Well,
I think that is an article which then changes the function of the adjective.
Well, I would say and otherwise cancel each other out.
Well,
but
hold
still.
On. Let's just... I got to listen one more time. This is the... you can note... this is exactly my brain works. I'm not even really caring about the politics of it. I just... The grammar seems to have thrown up a flag in my mind.
We should invite the millions of undocumented and otherwise law-abiding persons living in the midst to come out of the shadows by providing them with an opportunity to gain legal status.
So the way you do it is if you remove the word undocumented and otherwise law-abiding. So if you remove and otherwise undocumented persons.
A comma instead of the and would have probably been better.
Yeah.
You know, undocumented, comma, yet. You want yet. Yet or but instead of and there,
I think. We should invite the millions of undocumented and otherwise law-abiding persons living in the midst to come out of the shadows by providing them with an opportunity to gain legal status.
No, I don't even know. It's the whole thing. I need to see it diagrammed out. I don't even know what he's asking here.
Basically, he's saying that...
I'm seeing all trees, no forest.
Basically, he's saying that it would be nice if we took these people who are basically law-abiding citizens, but...
Except for the whole
not being here legally.
Yes.
And if they could step forward and have some alternative to breaking the law.
Here's an alternative to breaking the law. Why don't you not break the law? I mean, I'm sorry. I hate to be like, I don't want to be Johnny Obvious about it or anything and be going right to the bottom of the page where we have a simple solution, which is, you know, to not do that.
But I think what he's saying, though, is that we should help these people, like give them some sort of way to become citizens then, so then they can resolve their citizenship problem.
No, I'm just saying what he's saying. No, but that's not what he's saying. Because if he was, I mean, I'm not, don't mean to jump on you about this. I'm really not. I'm just saying... The thing is, that is what he would like people to believe he is saying. You know, we need to give them a way to become a citizen. There is a way to become a citizen, is the point. If he would like to say give them additional ways or easier ways or perhaps perhaps streamline or otherwise, I guess these are two things that mean opposite things, but augment the system somehow to give you alternate means to become a citizen, that's fine. But the idea that we are going to, quote, give people a way to become citizens, because that doesn't exist now, obviously. Did you read that there was that woman about 6 weeks ago who she is, I want to say it was Harvard, but it might have been somewhere else, where she had gone all the way through, like, grade school, middle school, high school, and I think was in her first year at Harvard when it was somehow figured out that she was, she was not a resident. She was an illegal citizen. It was not a citizen in any way. Because the whole thing, if you're born here, you become a citizen, and she was not. And so Harvard found that out, and then, you know, they said, well, I'm sorry, you know, the laws stipulate that this is only, you know, this the student loan that you are going to school on is, you know, for American citizens only, and that's the way it's written, and we got to yank it out. And then, so the first thing she did was, you know, she, like, retained a lawyer and, you know, put up a webpage or whatever about it, and she was throwing this massive fit that Harvard was not going to, like, comp her her education because she wasn't a legal citizen, like, leaving aside the fact that she'd already gotten 13 years of education to which she was presumably not entitled. So
did she know
that she was not a legal citizen?
Right. If this had been going on since childhood.
Yes. No, she knew. I saw in the article she was interviewed, she said that she knew that she was not a legal citizen. She just didn't feel the need to apprise anybody of that.
Oh, well, then I don't feel any sympathy for her.
Well, no, and again, and it's, you know, look, it's not like I can just go show up in France and say, look, I'm from somewhere else, but I want you to feed me and give me a free education. That doesn't really work. I think any other country would tell you to get bent. I think we are nearly alone in not telling people just flat out, like, well, no, you can't have anything. Go away. All right. I'm sorry. There he is, Don Taylor.
Well, Southern Baptist Convention official Reverend Richard Land says he wants immigration reform, including a path to citizenship for the nation's illegals.
We should invite them.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't play the thing again. It's giving me my head explode.
Once we have secured the border, and I believe that's got to be done with agreed upon metrics, then I believe we have to have a 6 to 9 month grace period for people who are here in an undocumented status to come forward to register.
Boy, just that guy's jowl-tastic. You can hear his face wiggling while he speaks. Let's hear that one more time.
Once we have secured the border, and I believe that's got to be done with agreed-upon metrics, then I believe we have to have a 6 to 9 month grace period for people who are here in an undocumented status to come forward to register.
He sounds like he looks like a big hound dog.
He really does. I can't think of a better way to put it than that. Never mind. I'm not going to get up and do a whole thing. Except to say that, A, there's a big edit in the middle of that soundbite. It makes me wonder what else he was saying there that he didn't really think should make the final cut. Also, I think he's misusing the term metrics there.
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all.
Thirdly, and I know you share my sort of fascination with / frustration at the amount of newspeak that is sometimes used in our everyday vocabulary here, and I don't know when the phrase undocumented started entering the American lexicon as a sort of I guess a more polite or a softer euphemism for illegal.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly whence that derives or why it is that we started to do that. But it's just, it's one of those things that doesn't help anything because it just masks the actual situation. All it does is just soften the problem to the point that it can't even really be, you know, it's like post-traumatic stress disorder. As opposed, I mean, you know, there's a whole essay about I read at one point about how the advancement of euphemisms for things like battle fatigue and how we come up with softer and softer phrases and words to describe those things to the point where you don't even really know what a guy's talking about. And you can't hear it anyway because his waddle is vibrating so loudly into the microphone that it just washes away all the sound. Here's Don Taylor.
Why don't we leap into entertainment news?
Fantastic. Here's your entertainment news for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Kelly Osbourne and British model Luke Worrell have called off their engagement amid reports that he cheated on her. "Thank you all so much for your support, but the matter is private and I will not be commenting," Osbourne said, of course, on Twitter. "Enough damage has already been done." Osbourne, 25, and Worrell, 20, were engaged in November 2008. Worrell stood by Osbourne during her rehab stint to treat an addiction to painkillers and supported her during her 9th season of Dancing with the Stars, often sitting in the ballroom with her parents, Ozzy and Sharon.
Now, what is his name?
His name is Luke Worrell.
Luke? How do you spell Worrell?
W-O-R-R-A-L-L.
I'm looking right here. Are you kidding me? She was engaged to this guy? This is a world gone mad. I don't understand anything about this planet of ours sometimes.
Is he quite handsome? He is a model.
No, he's not. Well, I mean, in a sort of spindly underfed kind of way. I mean, he's handsome he's good looking the way a model is. You know, and then he looks like he might break if you hugged him too hard. So, let's see. Is this a, I'm seeing these on a page called fyeahlukeworrell.com. And that is actually F-E-F-F. So, no, he looks like, this sounds weird. If Dee Dee Ramone were much thinner and a girl and also a little prettier, he would be Luke Worrell and also about 15 years of age. Oh, and here's a photo with his junk hanging out. Why did I have to see that?
Why was it the first
thing that came up there?
Oh,
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, she's better off without him. He looks like Justin Bieber, only taller.
That's my thing. He looks like a child. And I don't mean that in a grumpy old man kind of way. I mean, he looks like an underfed 13-year-old.
Yeah, he does.
Is this a photograph
of... There's a picture of him with no shirt on holding a woman's shoe, and it looks like some kind of kiddie porn.
Oh, man, I just want to see this guy taken out in the street and beaten senseless. I don't know why he hasn't done anything to me. He allegedly did something to Kelly Osbourne, but I don't really care about that. Just looking at this photograph of him, I just want to see him set upon by weasels. I just want to see him attacked by wolverines in the street while onlookers mock his pleas for mercy. Oh, I hate this guy. I hate everything about him. I can't explain it. Seriously, I know I'm going to send you a link right now. Are you on the email?
Yeah.
You know, don't we have like... We're sitting a foot away from each other. Isn't there a better way? And yet I can't turn my computer because of the plug. You're like 12 inches from me. Isn't there a better way that I can actually show you something? Don't we have an instant...
We need like a PowerPoint thing or we need a big screen up here.
We need a shared computer monitor.
Right. We could do that.
Okay. No. I'm sending you this photograph right now of this dick. Let's see. All right. Luke. And I'm going to post it online right now. Okay. Let's see. Dawn. I'm going to send it to your Gmail, right? Is that the thing?
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sending you a photograph of this jackass who I hate. He is my sworn enemy. I loathe him. There are no words for how much I hate this guy. All right. Worrell. I know this is really gripping because you're hearing me typing something. All right.
Yes, the audience really loves hearing us email each other things.
All right. Well, they'll understand when they see the photograph.
Okay, so right. I'm opening this up.
Visual aid for today's Legion
of
News.
Oh, God.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, the hat.
Don't you want to see him killed?
The little hip low-slinging hip jeans.
Killed with kindness? All right, I'm uploading the photograph. Okay, so you go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson. And
Kelly looks good.
She always looks good, baby. Kelly always looked fine.
Kelly is adorable.
I am the biggest fan. I find Kelly Osbourne really hot, and I always have. The only time that I didn't find Kelly Osbourne hot is when she was doing that thing where she just decided to stop eating and just became like a stick creature. All right. And I apologize. I left the colon off of Legion of News visual aid there. So just don't get all up in my face about it. All right. You go there right now. You tell me that guy deserves to be punched or not.
Yeah.
All right.
I want to punch him, and I never want to punch people.
All right.
Okay.
Maybe she needs to be comforted in her time of need.
If you watch NBC's The Jensen Project on Friday, you probably won't realize how much the science fiction movie owes to toothpaste and diapers. The movie was produced and bankrolled by Walmart and the Procter & Gamble Company as the second of what the companies hope is a long-running series of family-friendly programs that they will bring to television. Walmart and Procter & Gamble have started a new Alliance for Family Entertainment with the intention of making more movies for parents to watch with their children without bad language or questionable content. 40 advertisers are adding money to the alliance, and they say that more people will shop at their stores or buy their products if they see ads in family-friendly environments.
And where will these air?
The first one is a science fiction TV movie called The Jensen Project that's going to be on NBC on Friday. So, yeah.
Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, you know, it is a time where alternate revenue streams are important for companies of all varieties. It's interesting to note that we've kind of gone through this sellout bell curve. I was thinking about this the other day because people would probably, there's probably a certain segment of the society that is horrified by the idea of Walmart creating and presenting a movie. In other words, a television show that is bankrolled by, I mean, that's Procter & Gamble too, but I mean, bankrolled by and presented by Walmart. But, you know, that's how it was in the early days of television.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, Pepsodent presents the Jack Benny program. And it was literally a single advertiser, like Lucky Strike Cigarettes bringing you, you know, Milton Berle or something. Or Milton Berle was Texaco, actually.
Yeah, the General Electric, you know, Variety Hour and things like that.
The Smile Time Family Hour brought to you by Jell-O. And so we've really just come back around to that being the way it used to be. The idea of something being a sellout or of the corporate meddling being a bad thing in terms of, you know, or it's corporate underwriting of programs being a bad thing, that only existed for this weird middle period of the 20th century. I read something the other day, an interview with an artist that I quite like, although she's fallen off the radar for the last decade or so, is Jill Sobule, and how she was just mentioned casually in this interview that she was meeting with her agent trying to figure out how to get her songs in commercials, you know, trying to get her more products and whatever to use her material, which is a thing that would have horrified everybody up until about 1999, when suddenly they realized that you weren't going to be able to fund yourself just selling records to everybody.
Well, and this thing, the coalition of advertisers and Walmart and this sort of thing, and calling themselves the Alliance for Family, whatever, this is exactly like the group that was formed like 10 years ago, whenever it was, that their first thing that they created was the Gilmore Girls.
Right.
And Gilmore Girls
was awesome.
Gilmore Girls was terrific.
I forgot it was actually created by one of those groups for responsible viewing.
Yeah.
By the way, comments coming on the visual aid, the poster of, what was it, Luke Worrell? First comment from our friend Jenny. OMG, he looks like a 12-year-old emo moody douchebag. There you go. Who can say it better than that? Here's Don Taylor.
Michael Jackson's former home could become California's latest state park under an idea being floated by a California state lawmaker. Assemblyman Mike Davis said Tuesday he believes it's worth studying whether the California Department of Parks and Recreation should take over the Neverland Ranch in Santa Barbara County. The success of the proposal is uncertain in a state where the budget deficit stands at $19 billion. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger previously proposed selling the state's landmark buildings to raise cash to cover the shortfall. Jackson's 2,500-acre estate once housed amusement park rides and a zoo with tigers and snakes, but many of the estate's attractions were dismantled or sold after his death in 2009.
Occasionally, I forget that Michael Jackson is dead. It just sort of... in other words, it's not like I think he's still alive. It's just that... It's funny how Michael Jackson's death was such a huge deal, but it's like a meal that you've gorged on, and then you don't even want to think about it after that. Like you've had one too many gorditas or something, and you're just like, oh, I don't even want to think about a gordita. Don't even show that to me, dude. Just turn the channel. And that's how it is with Michael Jackson. So I guess these stories come up, and then I have to go through the whole process of, oh, yeah, not alive anymore. And by the way, can we just... You might as well... Having a park, presumably one that's going to be filled with children and families at Neverland Ranch... You might as well just put the entire thing on a series of Indian burial grounds. I mean, that's going to be the world's creepiest park.
Yeah.
There's nothing but bad vibes there. All right.
New on television tonight, there's a new episode of River Monsters on Discovery. Jeremy goes to Africa's Rift Valley in search of the Nile perch, which can grow to 8 feet and weigh 500 pounds.
So this is not like where they go looking for Ogopogo or some crap. This is
no.
where they're looking for like real, actual things that are also just terrifying.
Yeah, like giant crocodiles and things like that.
I never showed you OMG. I never showed you that that picture of that horrible undersea insect thing they discovered.
No. Oh, no. Yeah, no, you never did.
No, you're not.
No, I looked up that thing with the tongue, though.
No, I'm not talking about that. No. That's horrifying enough. That thing that eats your tongue and then lives in your mouth as a second tongue.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, God.
No, this is
I showed that to my husband. He was like, "You're making this up. It's not real." I'm like, "No, seriously. It's real."
No,
I kept showing him pictures, and he finally just ran out of the room.
They found the worst, most nightmarish creature that lives on the bottom of the ocean the other day. And I know... Because a bunch of dick listeners sent it to me, and they've now evolved past the whole nude photos of Britney, because that I'm onto them now. And so it was something like, see, now it'll be like, you know, pictures of Kelly Osbourne or whatever. And I opened it, and it was just, ah! And I pulled and it was the thing of pulling back from the monitor, and it was just this awful thing that some dive team discovered. It's a thing that is just from the mind of Lovecraft, and yet it exists. So I'll send that to you, you can share the fear with me.
Also, of course, tonight it's Thursday, so that means there's a new episode of Futurama.
Bam!
On Comedy Central. Tonight's episode, The Da Vinci Code. The crew goes to future Rome to unlock Leonardo da Vinci's secret. And on VH1, The OCD Project, in which Dr. Tolan holds a final group session and the patients face their toughest exposure.
I didn't even know the show existed. How have I not been watching this?
I don't know. I didn't know about it either, but it's about people with OCD.
And what channel is it on?
That's on VH1. That's why you didn't know that it existed.
Okay, so there must be like a spinoff of Celebrity Rehab. Isn't Celebrity Rehab on VH1?
I don't know, maybe.
I don't know what channel anything is on anymore. The TiVo has completely stripped me of knowledge for networks and time. I don't know when anything airs. It's like I just check the magical glowing box, and sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. And then if it's there, I watch it. All right, so the OCD project. I got to make a note to myself. Ironically enough, I can't because I don't have my day planner and I can't write it down on my legal pad. I have to write it in my day planner. Using the pen that is in the day planner right now, I can't use this pen in front of me.
And that's your entertainment news.
He's crazy. All right. And so forth. Here's Dawn Taylor.
An appeals court ruled on Tuesday that the FCC's indecency policy is unconstitutionally vague and could create a chilling effect beyond fleeting expletives heard on broadcasts. The ruling arose after Bono, frontman for U2, used what the FCC calls the F-word expletive during a live broadcast of the Golden Globe Awards.
That's where he called Bob Marley, or no, was it Bob Marley? He called somebody effing great. I forget who it was.
Well, Fox Television, CBS Broadcasting, and others challenged the FCC ruling in 2004, and they have finally got around to reviewing it and said, you know...
The FCC is nuts. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little much,
excellent.
They said.
It doesn't, you know, that really affects me at this point, but it is nice to see the FCC, the court just tell them to go eat one, to go eat a full bag.
To F themselves?
To go F themselves.
Even?
The court should have said that. And so what is this court's finding? That the Federal Communications Commission shall be penalized to one effing of itself as of now. Well, because you know the whole thing. I don't need to waste time talking about this, but you know the thing with the FCC ruling is it's just so unbelievably ill-defined as to be useless. So, and what nobody really realizes is that television programs could actually get away with a lot more than they do. I mean, even before, notwithstanding this new ruling, you know, and I think they actually said this in one of the articles I read in the New York Times about this, and it's totally true, that, you know, if he wanted to, David Letterman, and in fact Jay Leno for that matter, even when he was on at 10:30, could go on and just, he could just use the F word with impunity, because it's totally, because it's legal to say it between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. And so the television programs actually already exercise an admirable amount of restraint.
They even bleep stuff on cable programming, which makes no sense at all, because that was part of the whole point of cable programming in the first place, is that they weren't...
Which they don't have to. They could show full-on porn on Comedy Central if they wanted to, and it would be totally legal. For that matter, NBC could just have nothing but F-words and boobs on the screen for 8 solid hours between 10 and 6, and they would be violating not a single law. And the fact that they don't do so now in the face of stiff competition from cable is a testament to, to how whipped they are by things like parental organizations and whatever. All right, we gotta wrap it up. I'm on a thing. All right, let's end this now, shall we? All right. Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates in glorious one-channel sound from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Our executive producer is Bruce Agler. The chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com, featuring an interview with Alex Alika of Viso and today's top five. Top five songs from 25 years ago today. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.